Service is reactive, while customer experience is proactive. To make sure we're on the same page, customer service is defined as the assistance and advice provided by a company to those people who buy or use its products or services. Compare this with customer experience, which is defined as how customers perceive their interactions with your company. Trust me, you may want to memorize these definitions so you can explain them to someone else one day. Customer experience encompasses the emotions a customer feels when they interact with a product or service. When that experience goes beyond what the product or service is supposed to deliver, the consumer feels like they have a great experience and becomes emotionally involved with the brand. Customer service is how a business responds when things go wrong or a customer expresses a need. Customer experience, on the other hand, comes on the front end. It anticipates what might go wrong and structures the interactions to avoid this from ever happening. Customer experience is proactive. It's the environment, the feeling, and the scenario a business creates for the customer to trigger a series of desired emotions. Customer experience is more than raving fans. In the early 1990s, the book Raving Fans by Ken Blanchard and Sheldon Bowles offered a new take on the relationship between a business and its customers. The book's premise was that if a company did a great job creating a remarkable experience for its customers, not only was it good for business, because the company had fewer complaints, customer service queries, and overall drains on resources, but it would also create raving fans in the process. These raving fans would then go and tell everyone they knew about the product or service the business offered. Because of these fans, there was less need to put effort into marketing because the customers were already doing that. In many ways, Raving Fans is the book that popularized the benefits of word of mouth. This concept has been around for years. In fact, many of you probably read the Blanchard and Bowles book and are thinking you already know the importance of creating raving fans. Your business might already be working toward getting more of them. That's great. We have indeed come quite far, and we can all agree that both treating our customers well and inspiring word of mouth are important. Here's the problem, though. Most companies draw generalized, vague conclusions about customer satisfaction rather than examining hard data. If they're honest and do a true assessment, they find a much smaller percentage of raving fans than they think. But most don't even assess their actions. The work they're doing is not working, and most don't even know it. According to research by Bain & Company, when asked, 80% of companies say they deliver superior customer service. The customer's perception of the service level was very different. Only 8% of the customers felt the companies delivered superior customer service. These companies don't track customer emotions or experiences, nor do they have regular reporting or even a clear read on the pulse of their customer. Many companies want to create better experiences but feel like their resources are already 100% expended. We all want raving fans, but we haven't been taught how to create them. Raving Fans was a good start to the movement, but it was more inspirational than prescriptive. Never lose a customer again is the next logical step. It builds on what came before and provides a roadmap for where to go next. Building a remarkable customer experience, delivered consistently to all of your customers, starting the moment they transition from prospect to customer. Unlike product features, design elements, functionalities, and materials, it is very difficult, if not impossible, to copy another business's customer experience, making it the ultimate differentiator between you and your competitors. I've been giving speeches on this topic for over a decade, and I've asked approximately 100,000 audience members, almost all of whom work in business, why they don't provide a great customer experience for their customers. The answer almost always boils down to this. We know customer experience is important, but we don't know what to do or how to start. I'm going to show you. Chapter 6. You only have 100 days, if that long, to get it right. When I say customer experience is important, I mean that a memorable experience must take place during a certain window of time. It's not just that any experience a customer has with you should be pleasant. When the customer has that experience is crucial. In his book, Duct Tape Selling, my good friend and fellow speaker, John Jantz, notes that a sale is not a finished sale until the customer receives a result. A customer usually needs to use a service or product for a fair amount of time before they consider the purchase worth it. The customer must get their desired result before they can become a true fan of your company. You can't do a good job once and have an advocate for life. It doesn't work that way. One of the reasons it takes time is because very few businesses are like Altoids. You purchase a tin of Altoids, pop a few in your mouth, and boom, your breath is fresher. The result happens fast, and the Altoids live up to their curiously strong tagline. But with almost every other product and service, the result is not immediate. There is a lag between an item being purchased and the customer experiencing the fruits of the purchase. Despite the fact that it may be some time before a customer achieves their desired result, their feelings about working with you start to accumulate the moment the purchase is made. From the very outset of the relationship, a clock starts ticking, and every interaction, touchpoint, exchange, and communication contributes to their overall perception of your organization. Each of these interactions matters, and as they compile, their importance increases, as does the weight of their impact on the overall experience. It doesn't work to plan on making good impressions once the customer is proven loyal 6 months down the road. You'll never reach that stage in the relationship if the early interactions aren't remarkable. I like to emphasize the first 100 days after the sale as a critical window for securing customer loyalty, not because it is an exact time limit, but because it is easy to remember, short enough to maintain focus, and long enough to deliver value. This 100-day time period gives you the opportunity to form a relationship, impress the customer several times, and deliver consistently so they trust and like you. These initial impressions, the first few interactions, the early progress, and the rapport-building moments contribute to the customer's long-term opinion of you and your business. That being said, if you get these first 100 days of the relationship right, you can keep a customer for life. The specific applicability of a 100-day timeline varies depending on the industry. In some businesses, by the time a customer reaches the 100-day anniversary, they may still be waiting for the desired result. If the product is a highway, the land may not even be surveyed in 100 days. In other businesses, by the time the customer reaches 100 days, they might be actively giving referrals as they achieved their desired result and more. While the time period for someone to transition from new customer to raving fan can be less than 100 days, it is rarely the case. More often than not, it takes several months for the organization to develop a track record, establish a foundation of trust, and prove it can deliver on its promises. This groundwork must be in place before the average customer will put their reputation on the line and refer friends or family to you. Regardless of where a business falls on this spectrum, the point is the same. A 100-day time frame is long enough that it requires thoughtful consideration, yet short enough to feel manageable. To be clear, the start day, or day one, can vary within a company based on its procedures and offerings. For example, when you buy something online, day one is when you hit purchase after entering in your payment information. In a service business, day one is the day a new customer signs a contract with you. In a retail establishment, day one is when the customer signs the credit card receipt and the merchant hands over the merchandise. In short, if money is being exchanged or contracts are being signed, the 100-day clock has started. Customers won't wait 101 days to make up their minds about you. The brain is moving way too fast and is designed to determine your status as a friend or foe much earlier in the relationship. As the world has shifted from agriculture to industry, and the volume of information, associated time pressures, and variety of choices have increased, humans are actually forced to make more decisions, and these decisions happen faster and faster. From whether or not to like a Facebook status update, to what kind of salad dressing to order, to which shirt to wear, to which brand of butter to buy, customers are constantly making decisions. Research shows we make, on average, 219 decisions per day related to food alone. The number of decisions humans face daily is only increasing. If you want to influence customers' perceptions about your business in this ever-accelerating world, you must become more nimble and responsive with each passing year. Given the overstimulated nature of the modern world, a consistent, systematic approach to customer experience, sustained for 100 days, is necessary to build a rock-solid foundation of trust and rapport. The journey of 100 days consists of 8 phases. All customers have the potential to transition through a series of 8 phases over approximately 100 days. That realization came to me when I started a marketing and design business in January of 2002 called Design Symphony. My first service offering was logo design. I believed at the time, and still believe today, that the goal of a logo is to get the person who sees it to have both a mental and emotional reaction. The mental reaction is that they understand what your product, service, or brand does. The emotional reaction is how they feel about your product, service, or brand based on their initial interactions with the logo. My objective in designing logos was to pair what the company did with the warm feelings of how they did it. I work with my clients to create this feeling of connection in their logo, and then quickly expanded to helping them build mental and emotional connections and reactions into their advertisements, websites, marketing materials, and even their internal operations. As my business evolved, I discovered that when a company could pair what it did with the feelings of how it did it, the company would experience greater success and on a faster schedule. Designing businesses in this way is not unlike creating movies. If a movie has made you cry, laugh, or feel fear, it almost certainly wasn't an accident. The director and the producer knew you were going to have that specific emotional reaction, and they designed and structured the movie to create the experience for you. Applying this Hollywood technique in business, the customer's emotional journey becomes the primary focus. If businesses approach their customer interactions in the same way movies approach their audience interactions, figuring out the emotions a customer should have every step of the way, the entire world of business would change. This is why the first 100 days of a new customer relationship are so critical. During this period, the customer embarks on their own emotional journey. If it's a remarkable one, they will stay. If it isn't emotionally satisfying, they will leave. As I built my business and then helped other people build their businesses, I realized there was a clear and systematic way to create a customer experience. In fact, it came as a shock to me to realize that every single business went through the same process of customer experience. Whether it was the smallest retailer selling trinkets on Etsy, eBay, or Amazon, or the largest company selling huge airplanes or complex highways. The customer experience is 8 phases, and they are the same no matter what the customer is buying, how they are buying it, or how long it takes to deliver a result. Now that you understand the ticking clock that is the first 100 days of the customer lifecycle, it's time to explore the 8 phases of the customer journey. Chapter 7. The 8 phases of the customer experience. The 8-phase model takes customers from their first interaction to the point where they are raving fans. Every customer has the potential to travel through all 8 phases, Yet most businesses fail to guide the customer all the way through to the end. In fact, most stall out somewhere between phases 4 and 6, missing out entirely on the benefit of loyal customers and raving fans. Each subsequent chapter of this book will dive deep into each individual phase, showcasing companies that are creating remarkable customer experiences and outlining a series of steps you can take to make your customer interactions incredible in each potential phase of the customer journey. Before that, allow me to offer an overview of the 8 phases. Phase 1. Assess. In the assess phase, the customer is deciding if they want to do business with you. They are learning what to expect from your organization and sharing, both explicitly and implicitly, their expectations for the relationship. The customer is hopeful that you'll be able to help, but it's cautious optimism at best. If you don't position yourself as fulfilling their needs while wrapping them in a great customer experience, they won't choose to work with you. If you can convince them that you are the best choice, they will move forward with the purchase. This dance between the customer and the organization is what most people would refer to as sales and marketing. The potential customer is assessing their options. Phase 2. Admit. The admit phase begins when the customer admits they have a problem or need and believe you, the company or organization, can solve it. As a result, they buy your product or sign up for your service. This is often referred to as the sale. And sadly, in most businesses, this is where any customer-focused initiatives end. At this point, the customer is feeling joy, euphoria, and excitement that the search is over. If you fail to acknowledge this, you miss the chance to strongly associate this emotional high with your product or service. If you meet the customer's emotional state in this moment, you can prolong these positive feelings. This person transitions from prospect to customer when they admit that they need your product or service. Phase 3. Affirm. The affirm phase is more commonly known as buyer's remorse. The customer begins to doubt the decision they just made to work with you. Almost every business person has heard of the buyer's remorse concept, yet few businesses do anything to counter their customers' feelings of fear, doubt, and uncertainty. If you don't address these feelings, you will need to work overtime to get back to the state of joy, euphoria, and excitement the customer felt in the admit phase. If you focus on these temporary feelings before they become permanent, you can quickly shift the customer back to positive feelings. You must quickly affirm the new customer's decision to do business with you. Phase 4. Activate. The activate phase begins with the first major post-sale interaction, when the relationship between customer and organization first materializes in a meaningful way and the business begins to deliver on the promises made during the assess phase. The activate phase can be marked by the receipt of a purchased product, the start of a service, or an initial kickoff meeting to get things rolling. The customer is excited to get started, but somewhat anxious about whether everything will go as promised. If you don't start things off on the right foot, it will be hard to overcome that first impression. If you do start things off strongly, you can build momentum to carry you deep into the relationship. This phase's title should prompt you to energize the relationship and propel it forward. You need to activate the new relationship in a significant and meaningful way. Phase 5. Acclimate. In the acclimate phase, the customer learns about, and hopefully grows comfortable with, an organization's way of doing business. Too many businesses that have delivered their product or service dozens, hundreds, thousands, or millions of times assume that everyone in the world knows their particular process. For the customer, this is most likely the first time they've experienced this particular way of doing things. They are at best unsure and at worst frustrated by the lack of familiarity. If you don't properly onboard the customer and get them bought into your approach, they will never become a long-standing, loyal customer. If you do hold their hand along the way, you can ensure a smooth transition as they embrace your approach. You must acclimate customers to your way of doing business. Phase 6, accomplish. The accomplish phase of the customer experience occurs when the customer achieves the result they were seeking when they decided to do business with you in the first place. This may be the time they use the product and achieve the desired impact, or the time when your service delivers on the hopes they had at the beginning of the relationship. If you don't deliver, the customer's emotions can range from unsatisfied to angry. If you do deliver and the customer agrees, they will vacillate between happy and ecstatic that everything went as planned. In order for the relationship to advance, the customer must accomplish their original goal. Phase 7, adopt. In the adopt phase, the customer takes ownership of the relationship, leading the charge on deepening and strengthening the bond. In this phase, they proudly show their support and affinity for your brand and are thrilled to be associated with your reputation. If you don't make them feel like they're part of an exclusive tribe, receiving unique rewards and participating in a special shared language, you will never have their complete loyalty. If they do feel compelled to embrace you, you will have a customer for life. You want the customer to adopt your way of operating and take an ownership stake in the relationship. Phase 8, advocate. In the advocate phase, the customer becomes a raving fan, zealous promoter, and eager referral engine all in one. In this phase, they develop into a built-in, unpaid, uncommissioned marketing representative, singing your praises far and wide to other potential customers who might benefit from your product or service. If you don't persuade them to promote you by making it worth their while, they will likely continue as a customer, but will never help you grow your business. If they are motivated to promote you, your business will grow in unimaginable ways. The ultimate customer is one who becomes an advocate for your business or brand. Yes, all 8 phases apply to you. All 8 of these phases are the same for every business. They show up in the same order, regardless of the type of customer you serve, the industry you operate within, or your product or service offerings. All customers go through the initial phases. If you help them along the way, they will continue through the process, eventually arriving at the final phase where they become advocates for you and your business. If you don't guide them along the way, customers can get stuck in a phase, revert backward, or in the worst case, exit the journey altogether. Depending on the type of business, the amount of time a customer stays in each specific phase differs. But the goal is always the same. Keep moving your customers through the phases to stop losing customers and make every customer a customer for life. The 6 ways to communicate in each phase. When interacting with your customers, there are 6 key mediums of communication that, when used together, create a comprehensive and remarkable experience. In person, email, mail, phone, video, and presence. Each medium creates a different emotional experience. The impact on customer engagement depends on which phase the customer is in and how the medium is applied. I am not suggesting you must use each medium in each phase, only that it's possible. At the end of each subsequent chapter, I'll share suggestions and examples for incorporating each medium into that specific phase. In-person. In-person interactions are the oldest medium of human communication. Sitting across the table from a customer, speaking to them directly, and looking them in the eyes is the most effective way to create and build rapport in a relationship. In-person interactions allow you to show your level of commitment to the customer and their importance to your business. These interactions also eliminate any of the misunderstandings that can arise in other forms of communication. In addition, the ability to read the customer's body language in the moment lets you know whether the points you make are heard and understood. It also gives the customer the opportunity to read your body language and see your sincerity. Email. In a world where communication is 24/7, email has become the primary medium businesses use to interact with customers. Email is inexpensive and easy to track. With current technology tools, you can see when the customer reads the email, how many times they read it, and at some point in the hopefully not too distant future, whether they understood the content and intention behind the email. Because email is so inexpensive as a medium, nearly every business uses it as their primary method of customer communication. Because it's so prevalent in business communications, email overwhelm is increasingly common. Very few people are sitting in front of their computers or on their phones right now saying, "I wish I were receiving more email." But email can still be a valuable way to interact with your customers, provided it feels personalized and purposeful. Mail. With the proliferation of email, physical or direct mail, sometimes referred to as snail mail, has almost disappeared from the scene. As a result, the empty mailbox is now an even better place for reaching customers. Because there isn't nearly as much competition in the physical mailbox as there is in the electronic inbox, interacting with customers using this medium cuts through the noise quickly. In an increasingly digital world, physical communication is more valuable today than ever before. We've all experienced the emotional difference between receiving a handwritten thank you note in our mailbox versus a form-filled thank you note delivered to our inbox, or more likely, captured by a spam filter. Phone. The phrase "reach out and touch someone" was coined in reference to the use of a phone as a medium of communication that was as close to in-person as possible. Today, not only is the average customer personally accessible via phone, but most likely you can reach them at any given time of the day in any location. Morning, noon, or night, 91% of people keep their phone less than 3 feet away from their body, or within arm's reach, at all times. Picking up the phone and having a conversation with your customer, or sending a personalized text message, allows you to communicate in a tailored way that almost guarantees you will reach the customer immediately. Consider the impact of Dr. McCann's phone call to me the day after I had my new crown installed. The communication reached me immediately and allowed for a meaningful and thoughtful connection. In terms of speed of response, text messages are replied to faster than email. According to the Trade Association CTIA, which represents the wireless communication industry in the United States, it takes 90 minutes for the average person to respond to an email, but only 90 seconds for the average person to respond to a text message. Video. Attached to your cell phone is a video camera that is more powerful and capable than the best video cameras on the market just 20 years ago. Customers are increasingly consuming information via video on YouTube, Facebook Live, and other online video platforms. Most businesses haven't even begun to take advantage of using video as a medium to communicate with their customers, despite the fact that Facebook CEO Mark Zuckerberg believes, quote, "We're entering this new golden age of video. I wouldn't be surprised if you fast-forward 5 years and most of the content that people see on Facebook and are sharing on a day-to-day basis is video." Creating personalized, customized messages for customers is an opportunity most businesses overlook. The average business or business owner assumes they must first set up a video studio in the office, prepare a green screen, get the lighting just right, write a script, film the video, have it edited, add in sound and animations, and then send or post the video to a specific customer. This belief around the use of video couldn't be farther from the truth. Research shows that a handheld video shot using the video camera on your mobile phone with little to no script and without much concern for the background or the setting has a higher likelihood of not only getting through to your customer, but converting them to take the action you desire. In short, the informal video often works better than the more polished version. Present. The final communication medium, sending or giving your customer a present or gift, seems obvious, and yet it is one of the most overlooked ways to trigger positive customer emotions. While some companies worry about rules and regulations and considerations around gifting, which, depending on your industry and compliance rules, may be legitimate concerns, those that find creative ways to acknowledge their customers with presents build relationships and emotional connections with their customers that the other mediums don't allow. The best presents are meaningful and personalized. They exhibit a level of care and consideration commensurate with the relationship. In fact, it's better not to send a gift if you're planning to give a standardized bulk gift that feels sterile and common. Worse yet, sometimes companies give gifts that aren't really gifts at all. Giving a customer a coupon for 20% off a future purchase is not a present for the customer. It's a present for your company that you hope will be used to increase your overall sales numbers. Giving a customer a mug with the logo of your business on the side of it is not a present for the customer. It's a free marketing tool you're hoping other people will see. You don't have to put on a cape and become super creative to come up with gift ideas, nor do you need to break the bank. Just ask yourself what you'd get your favorite sibling or your best friend if they were your customer. If you like to call your customers family in your marketing materials, you should give gifts that treat them like family instead of like cogs in your marketing machine. Sending a personalized gift isn't nearly as hard as most people believe. For example, if you know a customer is a regular reader of business books, getting a book signed and personalized by a top author is a great way to give a thoughtful and meaningful gift that, one, costs less than $30, and two, fosters the customer's growth and learning. Phases, tools, and customers. Oh my! At this point, considering the various phases your customers go through and the tools you can use to enhance their experience might feel a bit daunting. Instead, consider being open to the fact that you may not have considered these phases in the past, and now you can. You may only be using two or three of the communication tools available to you. This is the average number in use whenever I poll my audiences about their current customer experience journey. And now you have more options for interacting with your customers. Rest assured that in the remaining sections of the book, I'll be presenting a step-by-step process for assessing the phase your customer is in, mapping their current experience, and enhancing their journey with a variety of tools and techniques. Let's consider the beginning of the customer lifecycle. Phase 1. Assess. Chapter 8. Phase 1. Assess. Here's the overview of the assess phase. In the assess phase, the customer is deciding if they want to do business with you. They learn about your organization, and they share their expectations for the relationship. Most people refer to this as sales and marketing. The $35,000 golf ball. Before starting my company, I work for an organization called the Corporate Executive Board that is best described as a for-profit think tank. We researched the secrets of great organizations around the world and shared our findings and recommendations with clients, C-suite leadership, in the form of written reports, keynote presentations, and on-site workshops. While it may not be obvious based on my title of Associate Director, Member Services, my job was really a sales position. I met with senior executives at Fortune 1000 firms and did my best to entice them to sign up for a membership in our organization. I would fly to a company's headquarters, meet with their senior executives for 1 hour, and in that short time frame, try to persuade them to spend, on average, $35,000 on an annual membership so they could have access to our findings and recommendations. One day, I found myself meeting with a senior executive at an energy company in the southern United States. I walked into his office and was stunned by both the size and the decor. The office was huge. If I had to guess, I would say it was 40 feet long and about 20 feet wide. What was even crazier was the fact that everything in the office was about golf. This senior executive did not have a little practice green in his office where he could put golf balls into coffee cups like a scene from a 1980s business movie. He had a four-hole mini golf course in his office. It had everything but a windmill. The office walls were covered in polished wood paneling and adorned with photographs from the world's top golf courses. Images from St. Andrews, Augusta, Pine Valley, Shinnecock Hills, and Royal County Down added a plush green hue to the scene. And there was a polished wood rack along the wall that housed a half dozen golf bags filled with clubs of all shapes and sizes. When golfers die and go to heaven, but still have to work a desk job every day, they go somewhere like this office. The executive ushered me to a seat right in front of his enormous carved wood desk. As we sat down, I found myself compelled to acknowledge the elephant in the room. "So, Bobby, it seems to me you might be a fan of golf." The executive laughed and said, "What was your first clue?" For the next 57 minutes, we talked about nothing but golf. I am by no means a good golfer, but I've spent enough time on the links that I could ask interesting questions and show that I had a better-than-working knowledge of the topic. I was also lucky. The week after this meeting, I was going to be on vacation with my family. My dad and my brothers are all avid golfers, and we were headed out to California to play Pebble Beach. If you're not familiar with the game, Pebble Beach is basically nirvana for golfers. I shared the details of this trip with the executive, and to my surprise, he whispered, "Joey, I've never had the chance to play at Pebble Beach." "Well, I'll make sure to let you know how it goes," I promised. This shift in the conversation brought the golf portion of our discussion to a close. Realizing we had only 3 minutes left in the meeting, the executive said, "I'm sorry we spent all this time talking about golf, but I do have to end the meeting on time as I have another commitment." I reached into my bag, removed a sample research report I brought along to share, and said, "No problem. What I can tell you is that when you are with us, you will be part of an exclusive club that will feel like Augusta. We will take care of you in ways you can't even begin to imagine. You will be surrounded by peers who you look up to and admire and can learn from. Like a pro caddy for your business, we will present you with the best research and the best knowledge to keep you in the fairway and avoid hazards now and in the future. This research is a sample of our work for you to consider, and I thank you so much for your time." I handed him the report, and I left the room. A week later, as I was walking through the Pebble Beach Lodge gift shop, I noticed a golf ball that not only had the logo of Pebble Beach, but also the logo of the U.S. Open. As luck would have it, that year marked the 100th anniversary of the famous tournament, and it was going to be played at Pebble Beach in a few months. I bought one of the golf balls, went to the hotel concierge for a piece of paper, and wrote a note to Bobby. "Dear Bobby, we had a glorious day playing Pebble Beach. When I saw this golf ball celebrating the 100th anniversary of the U.S. Open, I thought of you. I hope this memento is a welcomed addition to the fantastic golf paradise that is your office. Maybe someday we'll get the chance to play here together. Sincerely, Joey." I put the folded letter and the golf ball into a FedEx pack and had it shipped out for delivery the next day. 2 days later, I was back on the golf course when my cell phone rang. A horrible display of golf etiquette, I know. I answered the phone and heard my prim and proper assistant ask in her lovely southern drawl, "What the heck did you do to Bobby?" Excuse me? I replied. I just got a call from his assistant asking for our fax number and a contract because he wants to sign up and join our membership today. Here's my quick takeaway. It's not all about the sale. Connect with a customer and meet them where they are. Then follow through. Sorry, I couldn't resist the golf reference. Going above and beyond takes only a little extra effort and creates a huge return. The assess phase. Can you solve my problem? The first phase your customer experiences is assess. This phase occurs before someone becomes a customer. In this phase, the potential customer assesses whether your company will be able to solve their problem or provide the product or service they desire. Sometimes the assessing happens on a gut level. Customers often don't know what they want, but they feel they want something. The story you tell through your marketing either resonates emotionally with them or it doesn't. What many sales and marketing teams don't realize is that prospective customers are trying to feel out how they'll be treated post-sale. That is, once they surrender their money and all their leverage is gone. They know that sales teams can talk the talk, and they worry that the account reps down the line won't walk the walk. Oftentimes, this worry is subconscious. My experience with the $35,000 golf ball taught me a valuable lesson about this phase. How you make people feel about what it's going to be like to do business with you is even more important than your actual product or service. Bobby later told me he hadn't even read the report I gave him. Because I had given him a taste of what it would be like to participate in our membership and be treated in a remarkable way, I made the sale. The impact of the golf ball on my sales efforts is an example of the power of this stage. The prospect gets a taste of the continued experience of doing business with you, and if the taste is compelling enough, the prospect can't help but want more. The best companies in the world take the customer experience offered after the sale and infuse it into marketing and sales so that the customer gets a flavor of the good things to come. This not only incentivizes prospects to sign on the dotted line, but it properly sets the expectations for what will happen after the sale. Whether long or short, the assess phase always happens. How much time a prospect spends in the assess stage varies greatly. It can be a long, medium, or short process depending on the customer, the company, and the product or service being offered. This phase can last for days, weeks, or months, or even mere seconds. Consider a senior-level executive who wants to hire an executive coach to learn how to get better at employee interaction. The executive has many options. They will likely research and review several top executive coaches, interview them, possibly read their books, and then decide which one they want to work with. This assessment will take weeks and possibly months. On the other hand, what if you need peanut butter? You go to the peanut butter aisle at the grocery store, look at the dozens of brands of peanut butter, spot check the prices, consider the jar size, review the ingredients, look at the packaging, and decide within a matter of seconds which one to add to your shopping cart. The length of the assess phase varies based not only on the size and significance of the purchase, but on the amount of thought and consideration the prospect is willing to invest. For an action the prospect considers to be low impact, low risk, the decision is usually made quickly. For an action that has ramifications on job security, impacts family stability, or involves high dollar investment, the decision usually takes much longer. Marketing and sales often fail to consider the assess phase experience. In a typical business, the activities associated with the assess phase usually fall under the responsibility of the marketing and sales departments. Whether these efforts include running ads, distributing promotional materials, optimizing a website for search, or participating in a trade show, they are all part of the customer acquisition effort that attempts to drive prospects to the ultimate decision, and in the process, make a sale. The problem is that what happens after the sale is rarely addressed in any of these sales or marketing conversations. Traditionally, the marketing department has seen its job as being twofold. First, convince the customer there is a problem, and second, present the company or product as the solution to that problem. More advanced marketing departments present their service or product as the way customers can achieve their goals and desires. The sales department then takes those aspirational goals and aligns them with the product or service in an effort to persuade customers to invest their time and money to make a purchase. This focus on marketing and sales is, in and of itself, not bad. It works. I don't think we need to demonize marketing and sales to elevate the importance of customer service and customer experience roles. As a marketer and salesperson myself, I understand the importance of these two responsibilities. Yet there is rarely, if ever, a meaningful discussion about what kind of experience the customer can expect after the sale. At best, salespeople say things like, "We'll take care of you," or "We love our clients," or "You're important to us." These generic statements focus on the benefits of doing business with the company, but don't address any of the aspects of how the organization is going to help prospects achieve their desired results. The customer is told that they are going to be taken care of, but they are never told how that will happen. To bring the customer experience forward into discussions with a prospect, it's important to both share and show. Share your customer experience philosophy and detail the mechanisms you have in place to make sure you deliver a consistent, remarkable experience throughout the customer journey. Show the prospect what this looks like by treating them as if they are already a customer. Unexpected presents, extra little touches, and thoughtful gestures during the assess phase offer an emotional preview of the experience to come. The salesperson isn't the problem. It's the structure. In most organizations, the person responsible for getting the sale is not the person responsible for delivering on the experience afterward. The salesperson's job is to convince the prospect that doing business with the company is going to be an incredible experience, well worth the investment of dollars and time. Salespeople usually have no incentive to paint a proper picture of what life is like after the sale. The salesperson is not concerned about getting the right prospect, a person who will be a good fit and stay with the company for a long time, because they are typically incentivized by the total number of new accounts, not retained accounts. This typical organizational structure creates a functional disconnect between what drives and motivates the salesperson and what makes for a successful customer experience. The salesperson has no reason to build a long-term relationship with the prospect. Once the goal, making the sale, is achieved, they pass the relationship to someone else. The salesperson usually doesn't care about whether the handoff goes smoothly. The problem with this mentality is that the prospect believes that the information they share with the salesperson, the problems, the needs, the expectations, the requirements, is going to be seamlessly transferred to the account manager or some similarly titled individual after the sale is completed. This is rarely the case. Anyone who's ever been in sales or purchased something in this scenario knows the handoff is anything but smooth. The proverbial baton is dropped more often than not. So much so that the typical salesperson should be disqualified on nearly every deal. Salespeople usually focus too much on the early stages of the process, glossing over the specific steps that come after the handoff once the salesperson isn't leading the conversation. You'll sign the contract, pay the initial invoice, and then be transitioned to your new account representative. After that, the representative will work with you to make sure the project runs smoothly. This glib discussion of the process post-handoff leaves most customers feeling uncertain about the relationship with the new account representative. The information captured from the prospect is seldom relayed back to the individual or the team that handles delivery, implementation, account management, or execution. Rarely does the salesperson address the emotional or personal experience the customer will have when dealing with the company after the sale. The feelings associated with working together are just as important as the steps and deliverables, yet are rarely addressed. According to research by international consulting firm McKinsey, 70% of buying decisions are based on how the customer feels they are being treated. If a salesperson fails to take the prospect's feelings into consideration, the organization will grow stagnant and die from lack of sales. The good news is that it's not hard to fix this problem. The bad news is that it takes a shift in thinking and behavior within the entire organization, and specifically within marketing and sales. But don't worry, they can handle it. Pre-frame your prospect. To avoid disappointment after the sale, the salesperson should pre-frame the customer experience. In other words, explain and demonstrate the look and feel of the experience after the sale, as well as set expectations for future interactions. The salesperson needs to paint a picture of what can be expected, and then put the prospect at ease by detailing what will happen to make sure this image of life after the sale becomes a reality. To pre-frame in a meaningful manner, have interactions during the sales process that show the prospect you've been paying attention. By making your attention to detail evident during the sales process, you send a clear message that the prospect will receive this level of focus after the sale. Drinking beers at 9 a.m. I recently attended a 3-day seminar hosted by the financial advising firm Wealth Factory in Salt Lake City. The event was designed to introduce prospective clients, typically entrepreneurs, to Wealth Factory's services and offerings. The goal of the event was to provide valuable information about managing all aspects of wealth and finances, and to position Wealth Factory as experts in the field. If the Wealth Factory team achieved their goal, they hoped attendees would sign up to work with them on an ongoing basis. When I walked into the seminar room, just before the 9 a.m. start time, the founder and chief wealth architect of the company, Garrett Gunderson, came up to me and said, "Joey, we're so excited to have you here with us." "Thanks so much," I replied. "I'm excited to be here and learn more about your business." Garrett then took the conversation to an unexpected place. "A little birdie told me that you like root beer," he said. Someone had clearly done his homework. "I don't drink alcohol. I don't drink milk. If offered a Coke or a Pepsi, I decline both. When it comes to drinks, my typical choice is simply a glass of water. That being said, I love root beer. In fact, I'm a bit obsessed." Garrett produced a 6-pack of very good root beer and explained, "While we have refreshments throughout the event for everyone in attendance, we wanted to have these special ones just for you." With a simple gesture before the event even started, Garrett made me both a fan of his and of the Wealth Factories by extension. Doing the homework to tailor the experience to your prospective clients is an incredible way to show them how much you actually care. By investigating the individual's interests, likes or dislikes, hobbies, and habits, you can easily craft a series of interactions that will light up the prospect on an emotional level. My appreciation of Wealth Factory didn't stem from their providing me with a delicious drink, although that was a nice added bonus. I fell for Wealth Factory because they took the time to find out a little quirk about my personality and interest, and then took action to show me they had done their homework. By giving me a root beer, Wealth Factory showed me they care about their clients. While previewing the customer experience during the assess phase is certainly about respecting the prospect and doing the homework, I think the more important goal is to quickly build rapport via personal and emotional connections. The fact that Garrett would do the research, procure the root beer, and have it ready for me at an unexpected time, 9 a.m., shows a level of dedication and focus on the little things that is not the usual customer experience. Want to guess whether I'm a client of Wealth Factories now? Yes, and a very happy one. In the interest of full disclosure, Wealth Factory became a client of mine as well. When we talked about systematizing prospect and client interactions, Garrett was excited. While he knew Wealth Factory did many things right, like most exceptional business leaders, he knew there was always room for improvement. Too many salespeople are concerned with making the sale today, and in doing so, miss out on the long-term benefits of taking the time to build rapport. While it certainly requires more work and will likely take more time, the return on this investment of effort is incredible over the life cycle of the customer relationship. By helping salespeople see the benefit of moving beyond transactional relationships and implementing sales incentives that align with securing long-term customers, an organization can avoid customer turnover and instead bring in the right customers from the beginning. Instead of concentrating on closing the next sale, the best salespeople focus on the long-term relationship, even if it means passing on an opportunity today in order to secure a deeper connection in the future. Evaluating whether a customer will truly benefit from your product or service and sharing your recommendation with them, even if the recommendation is to not purchase your product or service, helps establish trust before the relationship officially begins. Pointing the customer in the direction of a competitor's service or product that would serve them better is another way to ensure that the prospect comes back to you next time they seek a solution. These types of selfless acts prove to the prospect that you are interested in a long-term relationship as opposed to making a quick sale. Here's my quick takeaway. Do the homework. Investigate your prospective customers to discover ways to please and surprise them very early in the relationship. If you can find one or two key personal details, you can grab and hold the customer's attention. If your product or service isn't the right fit, make sure to let the prospect know. This level of honesty is rare and always results in the customer coming back when they need help in the future, because you've built trust, even though it came at the expense of getting a sale in the moment. Pre-framing works individually and across your entire enterprise. Pre-framing works on multiple levels. This technique allows a business to go above and beyond the usual sales and marketing activities in order to make an experience memorable. By showing a prospect what to expect once they become a client, you can both set expectations effectively and hint at the good things to come. Pre-framing is not about singing your own praises and telling the prospect why you're going to be a great fit for them. It's not about explaining why you have the credentials, experience, and the expertise to help them solve their problem. It's about making the experience all about the customer by showing them what it will be like to work with you once they decide to purchase your product or sign up for your service. Some business owners begin to worry when they hear these stories. What do we have to do to create these bespoke experiences? How do I teach my employees to do this? How much will all of this cost? How do I do this once I have more than two or three customers? That's why I wrote this book, to teach you the answers to all of these questions. Doing these things is much easier than you might expect. Identifying ways to create emotional connection with a customer can take as little as 2 minutes if you're willing to listen when they speak and/or spend a few minutes perusing their social media profiles. Employees can be taught how to do this, and the first step is modeling the behavior by showing this level of interest and investigation into your employees' lives. It's almost impossible to expect an employee to wow a customer if they have never personally experienced being wowed. That sentence bears repeating, because I see it as one of the biggest problems with customer experience initiatives today. It's almost impossible to expect an employee to wow a customer if they have never personally experienced being wowed. The impact of an experience has very little to do with the cost of the experience. A single golf ball led to a 5-figure consulting engagement. A 6-pack of root beer led to a $3,000 per month ongoing retainer fee. It's not about the dollars. It's about the thoughtfulness. Personalized communications and connections can be systematized and done at scale. Certainly, it requires more effort, but once the philosophy is adopted across the organization and investments are